Hello, we are Terra Nova, a horror podcast. We're hosted by Kendall and Jackie. And here we talk about everything, well, horror. And this podcast is specifically for you, the horror fans, and also the non-horror fans. If you're too scared to watch the movies, it's fine. We talk about it, we discuss it, we dissect it, we laugh about it, talk about the good, the bad, the tropes, and new episodes are launched every Monday.
And follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Terra Nova Pod. And leave a review, 5 stars, of course, on what platforms that you listen. And last but not least, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend.
And tell your dog, too. Cujo. Hello.
Hello.
I kind of want to do like what Blackula did. No. Like, hello, 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 hello. You know? Do the made-up echo like he did. Like, then just on your head, your head, your head, your head.
That's one strange dude.
But he got a bad cape.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that would never not be funny. But yes, so it is still February. Pew, 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 pew.
Yep.
And so with that, we're continuing on with our movies, you know, based on Black cinema. And today we're going to be talking about, first of all, I want to say this whole month is all your choice. I just realized that looking at the schedule. I was like, oh, this is all Kendall's choice.
Every once in a while, you let me come through with some zingers. That's why.
That is true. And for this one, this was definitely one for me because I missed out on this one. And we're gonna be doing one of your favorites, The People Under the Stairs by Wes Craven, released in 1991.
Yes, yes. I'm cheesing from ear to ear.
I can hear it. I can hear it in your voice that you have the biggest ass smile right now. I could just hear it.
You gotta understand, this is the movie of my childhood right here. Me and my pops, he had this on VHS. We used to watch this movie all the time. Like, I'm telling you, like, about as much as we watch Blade, we watch this movie. Like, it was just so good. You know, there are a lot of movies with black leads, but you know, a lot of people don't know of them, or a lot of people don't see them. But you know, when you're a black person, or you know, you're a person of color of some sort, and you see, you know, yourself kind of reflected in the film, you said, you know, you get latched onto those movies and you love them. That's why, you know, we have the Tales from the Hood and Vampire in Brooklyn. I watched these movies a million times as a kid. I was just like, yo, like, this is horror to me. These are like awesome fucking movies. And this is another one of them classics. I was like, I need to throw it in Jackie's face. If she ain't never seen it, she got to see this one. So I was like, we got to put this on the calendar. And a lot of people didn't even think of it as horror, but it is, and we're about to get into it.
Oh, yeah, it is. For me, I mean, I'm going to talk about my experience watching it, but, like, yes, it is definitely horror.
For sure. For sure. So, I don't know. Should we jump right in so we have a good time with this?
Yeah, because I have thoughts.
You know what? I believe you. I believe you. I'm going to hop right into it. Let's do the summary real quick. So, as Jackie so eloquently said, People Under the Stairs, if you haven't heard of it, here's something for you to watch maybe this Friday. It's a 1991 film. Wes Craven, which I actually forgot he made this film. Because if I had to really think about it, this is probably my favorite Wes Craven film out of all the ones he's done, including Scream. I just like this movie that much. That's just how much I enjoy it. But the summary real quick, walk you guys through it. Those of you who have and haven't seen it. My understanding, the film basically takes place in L.A. And the lead character is this little kid. He just turned 13 years old. His name is Poindexter. His nickname, as you can say, is Fool. His sister did a tarot card reading for him on his birthday, and he got the Fool card. And they just started calling him pretty much Fool from that point forward. So everyone's just like, Fool, hey, Fool. And it's really funny. It kind of cracks me up. Actually, reminds me of one of my friends always says Fool. I wonder if that's the reason. But yeah, so probably. And I just didn't even consider it because I know she's seen all those movies. But yeah, so Poindexter, the Fool, as you want to call him. He basically, you know, he grew up in L.A., living, like, in the ghetto, as people say, or the hood. His family, you know, making ends meet how they can. And he lives with his mom, who is sick, she has cancer, and he's living with his sister. and her sister's boyfriend comes through occasionally and stuff like that. And, you know, he's a little bit older now, so he when they started talking about certain aspects of, you know, just living, he was just like, Leroy, his sister's boyfriend, was just like, hey, yeah, you're going to have to get out of here in a few days. Like, you know that. And he's like, and Dex was like, why? I don't get it. He's like, well, yeah, I don't have money. You know, the way the lease is set up, if you're 3 days late on rent, then your rent triples, which is easily the most outrageous policy I've ever heard, ever. That is OD insane. Like, your rent triples from being 3 days late? That's crazy. So it's like, your rent triples, and then if you don't pay that, you basically get kicked out. You get evicted. He was like, oh, that's crazy. And like, he's like, well, you got any money? And Bull is like, I don't. And then Leroy basically comes up with a plan, or a scheme, as you can say, because he finds out the location of the landlord, of the property owner. He finds out where they live. He's like, hey, they own a bunch of properties. They have all types of money. They're swimming in money. And he found out, based on, you know, tying a few threads together, where they live. He was like, hey, I could probably plan something to go there and rob them, and then we can use that to pay your rent or whatever. And Poindexter, of course, he's like, his family kind of generally, my understanding, they kept him out of that kind of activity. But with his mom being sick, and he's knowing that he just needs money to help his sick mom because she has cancer, but it's curable if he has the money to pay for it, which they unfortunately don't. He kind of, I guess you can say, against his sister's approval, but he kind of decides to help Leroy, and Leroy kind of pushes him to help him, like, rob their landlord, which is a really interesting concept. That sounds crazy.
He was so annoying.
So then you get introduced to this family.
Leroy was just so annoying. He would say, you a bitch? What are you going to do this? You a bitch? I'm like, sir, he's a child.
Leroy was definitely doing the most, played by Vin Rings. He was doing the most. He was just like, hey, man, you of age now. It's time for you to step up and figure out how to make money. But, you know, people get caught up in that sometimes, so that goes a lot of ways. But Poindexter, you know, he's a smart kid. He has a good head on his shoulders. He wants to become a doctor when he grows up. Stuff like that, you know, his biggest hurdle at the moment is just, like, financial. So Leroy came up with the plan and was just like, hey, man, you can help me do this. And he's like, he really don't kind of want to, but he's also like, how else you going to get the money? What else you going to do? Like, Leroy just kind of, you know, kind of borderline treat him like an adult, but also treat him like a kid. It was really weird. Mm-hmm. But he comes up with this scheme to rob the landlord. And and Leroy brings in his friend Spencer, if I recall, Spencer, to help out. And they case the joint, and they're looking around to try to figure out how they can get in this house. From the understanding that you have at the beginning of the film, nobody is really aware of what this family is like what the landlord's family is like. Like, no one has any idea. They just know they have a lot of money, and they're white, and they collect rents from all these places, and they're known for letting buildings fall apart and then moving everybody out and then rebuilding it. And part of the reason that they believe they're even being evicted, well, from Leroy's understanding, he said he believes part of the reason they're being evicted is because they're the last family left in that building, and the owners already plan on knocking it down and then rebuilding it and kicking them out. So you're like, okay, with all of this, you know, gentrification and all that stuff come into effect, he's like, all right, cool, let's do this. So they start casing the joint to try to get an idea of what the house is like. They send they send Poindexter to go to the door almost like a Boy Scout, kind of be like, hey, I'm trying to help with this cause. Just like to try to, you know, distract the owners so that they can case the joint. That goes horrifically wrong. That doesn't work out. They're just like, nope, get out of here. From what they show you, there is a man and a woman, and they live with their daughter. That's pretty much the family unit that they show that lives in the house, that's the landlord's house. So that plan doesn't work out with Poindexter. And then Spencer also tries to just say, hey, I'm going to go in and just, I got a way to get in, and I'll figure it out. He pretends he works for, like, the, I think, gas company, I believe. And then he convinces the lady to let him in. He's like, hey, I have to check it. If you don't let me in, we're calling the cops. So you might as well just let me go in. He gets inside. They don't really show you what happened to him initially. But Leroy and Poindexter, the fool, just like, he's taking a while. Like, I wonder what happened. And Leroy is also like, he's probably in there taking stuff for himself. Like, we should go in before he stuffs his pockets with everything. We don't get anything out of this. So they go inside. They find a way to break inside, and they get in, and they just realize, oh, this house is strange. Like, there's this guard dog that's basically, like, pretty much trying to eat them. There's crazy bolted locks and doors everywhere. The doors just look weirdly guarded. There's, like, weird sounds coming from, like, the walls, from the basement. There's weird-looking people all around. Just, like, this house is pretty much hell in every possible way that they couldn't imagine. So I'm going to speed up through it a little bit, but the things just go torrentially wrong. Like, as bad as they pretty much can get. Poindexter finds Spencer. He's dead. Some point along the way, when they're trying to hide from the owners, when the owners come home, they realize the whole house is basically trapped and has all type of contraptions. They have buttons to make sure every door slams shut so people can't hide. All types of stuff that you would never expect to be in a normal house. The windows aren't even regular glass. You can't break them to get out. It just all goes terribly, terribly wrong. Leroy ends up being murdered. The fool ends up being the last person left. He stumbles upon the girl that lives there, Alice. He's like kind of trying to talk to her to see what her deal is. Turns out she's been abused by her family. So there's a lot going on there. He hears people running around in the walls. One of them actually helps him. It's like this kid who had his tongue cut off and his name is Roach. And he helps him out to help him navigate the house as like the, I guess you could say, mother and father or mom and dad, as they call them, were trying to kill him. Because they weren't trying to catch Poindexter to get him out the house. They were trying to kill him. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, yo, what the hell is going on in his house? Like, what is happening? So all of this basically happens, goes to hell. At some point near the end of the movie, Poindexter actually gets free from the house after, like, with the help of Alice and the help of Roach, who ends up dying along the way. He gets free of the house. He tries to get the cops involved to try to go back there, like, hey, there's something wrong here. He speaks to his grandfather. His grandfather makes it very clear. He's like, that family has been weird for a long time. Like, even when I was a kid and it was a different part of that, different members of that family who lived there, we never went past that house because we heard so many rumors, because there used to be a funeral company, basically, and then somewhere along the way they switched into real estate and just made so much more money and would just let all of their units fall apart, and they were like the worst owners. And he was like, and they're brother and sister. And Poindexter was like, what? He said, yeah, they're brother and sister, like, they're not married. Like, he's like, well, okay, that's really weird. So that just kind of flips how you look at that family entirely, because you're like, you thought they were married this entire time and that was their child. Turns out they've been kidnapping babies and then raising them to try to be the perfect child. And if they don't act properly, they punish them in a lot of ways. Do mutilation. They cut off one person's tongue. They've chopped them up. They leave them in the basement. They feed them the leftover body parts of people who broke in and tried to escape. They treat them just terribly. Mm-hmm. So it's just all of this kind of comes to light in the end of the film. And you're like, holy fuck, it's a lot happening here. He's like, he just wanted to pay for his rent and help his mom out, and turns out this family is like straight up evil. The dude's wearing like basically a crazy ass S&M outfit to like try to murder people. It's insane. It's insane all around. You get the vibe that not even just the vibe, they show you that clearly Alice, the daughter, has been abused in a lot of ways. They throw her in boiling hot water to bathe her. They clearly beat her. Possibly sexually assault her based on some of the interactions you've seen between her and the guy who calls himself father. You know that there aren't actually her parents. It's just so much going on here. But to get to the end real quick, Poindexter, you know, he discovers all of this. He realizes this. He calls the cops to try to get to go there. The cops don't do much because they don't find anything, but they just don't do much. But the funny part about that is Poindexter pops back up and he tries to get Alice free, and he tries to help resolve the situation. He finds the money. He helps out with just everything, and then it kind of falls in the right way. The quote unquote mother, as she calls herself, ends up getting eaten by the people, all of the kids that she trapped downstairs, who are now basically adults in a lot of ways. They just literally come out of the walls because the house is just contrapted like the craziest fucking video game you can ever imagine. They come out of the walls and just eat her. Alice stabs her. Father ends up going because they blow the place up with dynamite. Money ends up flying everywhere. Poindexter's sister actually comes to the house as well. She's like, you guys have been abusing your power this entire time, and the whole neighborhood is not going to stand for this. So, and then now the money goes flying in the air after all of this, and now those crazy people are dead, and Alice seems to be free, and then the people, kids who are now adults are free, and it's a cool happy ending. And Poindexter ended on a nice line where she was just like, Alice said, how do you feel? And he was like, I feel like $1 million. And I love it. It was really, really, really good movie. Really all around sweet movie. So first impressions, because Jackie's never seen this, so this one slipped through the cracks for her. How'd you like it? Would you not like it?
You know how we see those pictures when something, and I mean like whenever like white people do some weird shenanigans, and there's always that one picture someone posts where it's just like what is the white going on here? Or like always Caucasians or something. That was blinking in my mind this whole entire movie with those siblings. When the moment Uncle Buck told them, Oh yeah, they're siblings. They're not married. You know, they're crazy and this. And I was just like, what in the Caucasian is going on? What in the Caucasian? Yeah. It's like crazy. Like, oh my God. Yeah, it's definitely scary. I mean, for someone who's never seen it, I mean, I'm sure if I watched it like as you did as a child, I would have been like really freaked out by it. But I'm a grown ass woman. And it still scared me my first time. And that just shows how good of a movie Wes Craven did with this. Because it was really scary. And I think what scared me the most is the realism side of it. I mean, Wes Craven has done so many films that, you know, besides Scream, the first Scream was actually really scary because it took something real and then he turned it into something horrifying, which he tends to do a lot. Because he's a sick bastard. I'm just kidding. I don't want his ghost to haunt me. But in this situation, he did the same thing too. He took something that's real, something that happens even to this day, and turned it into, like, you know, the Jordan Peele effect, turned it into a horror movie. So I think that's why it was scary. Realistic, the siblings were the most scariest part because there are people like that in real life, which is really horrifying. Like, people like that exist in this world,
yeah,
which is scary. And yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. it had funny moments. I mean, similar to like every movie we've done. Again, whenever you don't think movies have social commentary, it has social commentary. And this movie is like a textbook of social commentary. Like, if you look up the word, Kendall, what is social commentary? This movie will be pasted underneath it of like, this is social commentary.
Facts.
Because, yeah, it deals with like racism, classism, you know, displacement, gentrification, child abuse, child kidnapping, you know, it's something that's real and it's scary. And also, you know, the healthcare system, you know, the fact that they couldn't afford the money to get operations because they're poor. And that is how the health system is. Like, even to this day, it's still messed up. You still can't get anything unless you're white and have money. Then you're all the way in the bottom of like the list of like, who's next for care, and it's so ridiculous. But yeah, that was a lot. Wow.
Yeah, a lot is the nice way you could say it. I had a feeling you would enjoy the movie. Even seeing like when I saw it as a kid, like obviously I don't even really gotta say first impression. I saw the movie a million fucking times. Like I think I watched it almost twice a week when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was like 8 years old or something. Because the movie came out when I was 2, and I think the first time I saw it, I was probably like 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like it was, some of that stuff clicked to me immediately as a kid, even as a kid. It was just like, yeah, he's like, oh man, my mom's sick. Like, you know, Leroy kind of beat it in his head, but he was like, your mom can be cured. Like, she can be better, but just think about the fact that a doctor isn't going to do it because you don't have the money. Like, that's ridiculous. And I was like, yeah, he's 100% right. Like, it's one thing if someone has like an incurable situation, but another thing where it's just like, wow, the only thing keeping me from being in a slightly better situation is like money. That's pretty terrible. But I love the character, Poindexter. Like, I love how smart he is, despite being a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, he's super smart, super cool. He like reminds me of like kids I hung out with like when I was a kid and stuff like that. He's just a really cool character. Really, really fun. Like, it was like, the movie is definitely scary. Like, I'm not gonna pretend this ain't a movie that can scare you. Like Jackie mm-hmm. said, it scared her and she's an adult. So this movie ain't like some fake scary where you're just like, oh, these kids are like slightly in danger. No, like there's literally a dog trying to eat them. There is literally this grown ass man dressed in like a S&M costume with a shotgun shooting through the walls. And he, for some reason, this motherfucker has a bayonet on his gun and stabbing through walls. And the entire house is booby trapped. And there are things reaching out of the walls and grabbing people. Like, this movie is like straight up scary, despite the main character being a kid. But he's like, he's dealing with it, but he's trying to keep it, you know, there's funny moments of lightness that kind of make you chuckle. Like, Roach was fucking hilarious. Like, Roach was one of the kids who was like living in the basement, but it seemed like maybe he was one of the more recent kids that was down there, that was placed down there, because he seems to not only just look still more human, but he seems to understand, like, oh, the parents, or quote unquote parents, which are really brothers and sisters, they're terrible people. Like he totally gets that, and he's like, he's willing to do anything to, like, get on their nerves. And it's just funny hearing, like, a grown ass man running down the hallway, "God damn it, roach!" And you're like, you think he's talking about a roach, but he's talking about a person. Like, moments like that are hilarious. And like, when he met Alice for the first time, because she helped him, and then she, like, was kind of timid. You know, we know she's timid because she's never been outside or anything like that. Like, she's clearly been, like, completely sheltered. He doesn't know why she's timid. And then he's just like, it's all right. Like, don't worry, I'm not going to hurt you. Like, have you never seen a brother before? And she's like, I don't have a brother. He's like, no, I meant black people. A lot of them live around here.
Oh, my God. Yes. Like, you've never seen us before? You know, like, the neighborhood? And she's like, what's a neighborhood? And he's just, like, telling her, like, girl, have you ever been outside before? What's wrong with you? Yeah, that whole scene was just, like, so funny. I'm just like, oh, my God. Ugh, God. Fucking Brendan Adams. I love that kid. Again, like, who's ever listening to this and you hear this and you comment on our stuff when this episode comes out, was he not in freaking Michael Jackson's Smooth Criminal video? I know he was in that mini video. If he is not, you're allowed to call me a fool. If he is, give me a thumbs up. I know he's in that video. All I have to say. Anyway, continue.
He was definitely in something. It was great. I don't know. What was the scariest thing to you about the movie?
Oh, man. That scared you. I think everything was scary. Well, I mean, I definitely had, like, tense moments with the way they interacted with Alice. Like, I was just like, what the fuck? I mean, that kind of freaked me out. Also, when he found the basement. I mean, I've always had this... it's kind of an ongoing joke, but it's also something real because, I mean, I am Afro-Latino and I watch a lot of horror movies. Do not put me in a fucking basement. I don't care how clean your house is. I don't know how long... I don't care how long you've been there. I don't like basements. I even told my brother... He was just like, oh, you can sleep in the basement. We have a bed there. I'm like, no, sir. You can sleep there. I'm sleeping in the guest room upstairs. I'm not sleeping in the basement. Because there's always some ghost in there. And the fact that they kept the kids, the boys in there, was just so creepy. The way they looked. The fact that they were cannibals. But I think it was just really that. I think the shock factor of everything is what scared me the most. Of how, like, disturbing the brother and sister were, and how they kept like the boys in the basement caged up, like starved them, made them into cannibals. It was just, I think that's what really freaked me out the most. But I will give the fact that we started off with action. It wasn't a slow burn. Like, this movie is not a slow burn for those who are wondering who's never seen this movie. It is not a slow burn. You're gonna get hit with action right away because. Yeah, I did not think it was going to turn the way it did with this film. You know, people understand. I'm thinking, okay, he's going to meet like some troll-like people. But like, hey, man, come on, just hang with us. No, it was completely different from what I thought about. And I'm just like, wow. The S&M thing was weird. I did not get that. I was like, why is he dressed up like he works in a porn shop with his gun? Hunting these kids. I'm like, God, what's happening here? It's weird.
The best assumption you can make about that is that they have him and his sister have like an incestuous relationship, which like tends to be what people kind of assumed anyway. Like, not like people in the movie, but I mean like people who've seen this movie tend to assume they had like an incestuous relationship, even though obviously throughout the entire movie, like, you don't see them kiss or anything like that, or barely even touch, honestly. They just more so celebrate when someone died. But you could kind of assume that they have an incestuous relationship. And I don't know, maybe he got some serial killer mama problem shit. Like, maybe like, I don't know, maybe he likes pain. Maybe that's their sexual thing. Even though they don't like hint at it. They hint at it, but they don't really show them do anything that would make you assume that. But once you find out they're brother and sister, it's like, yeah, they probably are doing stuff. Like, they have a weird relationship.
Well, I mean, they're white.
And, yeah.
I don't care.
Obviously not all white people like that, Jack. I love the way you said that so casually.
Because it's but, true. I'm sure someone's going to be like, what happened to Spanish couples? Yeah, I know what happens to us too. It's not our fault. We were displaced everywhere. We don't know half our cousins. So give us that.
Yeah, no,
we don't know any half
facts.
Our cousins. You all know your family. That's the difference.
For the most part, yeah. And I think the movie, the thing that made this movie extra funny to me, even as a kid, was like, I always heard adults, just pretty much anyone who wasn't white, like any person of color, some sort, Hispanic or Native American, or indigenous, however you want to say it, just non-white people, anyone that I've grew up around or been around, I've always heard somebody when I was a kid be like, yo, white people just different.
It's true.
Like, you probably heard it the same as well, right?
Yeah, it is different, man. So I'm sure someone's gonna be like, we know how it was, because that happened to my friend of mine. He was literally hitting on someone. He had no idea that was his cousin until his uncle told him, like, oh, that's your cousin. He's like, oh shit, I didn't know that. We don't know half our cousins. We're all displaced everywhere. White people know their family.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So they're definitely built different. Like, yeah, I'm telling you, it's that meme. The whole, like, what in the Caucasian going on here?
Yeah, that definitely does add another layer to it when you can, like, definitely point back several generations of family. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, just generally, I just always remember, like, adults when I was a kid just being like, your white people are different. And nobody really ever tried to explain it. Nobody ever really, like, I feel like nobody ever had to say it to another person, and then the person was like, what do you mean? I feel like for some reason everyone just has some sort of strange understanding of that.
Yeah.
But no, but it was like an unsaid understanding. And then this movie just kind of took that and put it on 1,000.
Yeah.
And was like, you know what? Not only are they different from you, but watch this shit. And it is like, you got an incestuous relationship between a brother and sister who pretty much anyone who doesn't live in the neighborhood would think it was a husband and wife. And they have a kid. If you didn't live there, you would assume that.
Mm-hmm.
Their fucking house is... I don't even know how they did the set design for this house. This house is insane. It's 3 stories. The walls are basically like other rooms. You can get to access to like almost any... pretty much any part of the house through a wall by just walking through the walls. There's fucking cabinets and slides that take you to different areas. The staircase can be turned off and on so that it becomes a slide. Like, this house is insane. This house is crazy. The house might be the scariest thing in the movie outside of the cannibals.
Yeah. The funny thing about the house, too, is that that's an actual house. I mean, of course, they put their prop people into work to turn it into contraptions, yeah, and all stuff like that. But it's called a Thomas W. Phillips residence, and apparently I think the main actress from Gone with the Wind used to live in that house for many years. And it's like one of those historical landmark houses, I think, that Wes Craven found, like he always does with his movies. He was just like, you're that house. And they just turned it into, you know, a house of hell, basically, with all the booby traps and the things. Yeah, it's really scary and crazy. Like, they did a good job with that, like set design wise, prop design wise. Like, props to them, for the team, for doing that. Because the staircase that turned to slide to the basement, that was pretty clever. I was just like, oh, that's smart. That's cool. Like, they did a really good job with that. And then the walls breaking, like, yeah, that was dope. Like, props to them for that.
Yeah, that whole house, like the way it's just set up, you're like, holy shit, like, it could literally just, it is the worst, it's a nightmare. If you were ever trapped in it, it would be a nightmare. With the flick of a switch, every door in the house slammed shut and locked, so you can't even hide in rooms, or you're trapped in a room. Like, that's crazy. That is so crazy.
Yeah, and the lights go off, and, yeah, the windows are, I think the windows were soundproof. They were glass-proof and soundproof, because Poindexter found Alice, and, you know, they noticed the cops were there because they were like, oh, you know, we're looking for this van, there's these burglars or whatever. You know, he's banging on the window to be like, hey, please help, 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 but they don't hear him because it's glass proof. I mean, soundproof. Mm-hmm. I think they probably did that after. Remember Alice mentioned that there was someone who tried to yell for help, and I think it was Roach, and they cut his tongue off so he couldn't talk ever. That could have been why they made it soundproof, because they were just like, all right, these boys have an attitude, we need, you know, a girl, whatever. Yeah, it's just, I think that's who's what scared me the most, was the kidnapping of the boys. Mm-hmm. It's because, again, Wes Craven, like him or not like him, because some, you know, sometimes Wes Craven did come up as in like, what are you doing, sir? But he was a good director and a good person. Props to him for setting the tone and setting the mood in LA at the time when it was the height of gentrification. It was when the rich started to move in and displace, you know, like people who were living there. And this at the mm-hmm. time when that was actually happening in real time in West Adams, I believe this where it took place in LA. And he did a good job doing that with that, because I'm sure, I mean, we see it now today, you know, children unfortunately get kidnapped, and depending what they look like, sometimes they get searched for, and sometimes they're just written off as it, well, they're just runaways, they're bad apples. Ooh. So I could assume that some of these kids who they kidnap are probably kids that probably were like bad apples. Nobody was looking for them, because otherwise you would have seen, they would have talked about it a lot. You know what I mean? Like, besides the rumors of the couple being weird, they would have mentioned that in the rumors. Like, oh yeah, I heard kids go missing all the time. That was never mentioned. So I could only assume that these kids that were there kidnapping are those that kind of were flagged off as in, well, they probably just ran away and joined some gang or something. You know what I mean? Like, and that's really sad, because that's also, that still happens today when certain children are written off as runaways. Or of like, well, what did you expect? And it's just like, no, that's, you still should search for them. That's messed up.
Yeah, no, I understand that entirely. But I think all the kids that they took were white. I think even though they, white kids do sometimes end up in the exact same situation. But I think all the white kids they took, all the kids they took were white, and it from what the.
No, I, yeah, I think they all were.
But I think from what his grandmother said. They were all white, but it was the thing that they took. They took them all when they were babies. That's why they all of the kids assumed that they were their parents.
Mm.
That's why Alice didn't even know that they weren't her parents.
Yeah, because you're right.
They took them when they were younger, so they have no idea. So, you know, she just thinks her parents are insane, and she's doing what she needs to do. That's why on point Dexter was like, those aren't your parents. I don't know if you know that, but those aren't your parents. They took you. And she's like, you're lying. Like, that can't be true. He's like, nah, that's real. Everybody, all the people down there who are people, all them people, they took them when they were kids. Like, they've been doing this for a while. It's probably like a family thing that they've just been doing for a while too, all things considered. I guess that was just their way of appearing as a normal family. But they really weren't.
That's so sad. I think that happens too in real life. I've heard stories of people taking babies from the hospital as newborns. I'm like, this is my child.
Because I heard of some stories.
Yeah, because sometimes they don't always have mass security at the nursing place. Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. And anyone could walk in and be like, hey, that's my baby. Or just take it, you know, someone just walk in. Like, that's really sad and scary. I totally forgot about that. Okay. I probably missed that.
Everything you said does apply, though. But it's just, in this particular case, it might half apply and half not. But some of them seem so old. So much older, they
mm-hmm.
can still apply. But it's like weird, because it feels not weird, but it seems like the commentary that you can say Wes Craven was trying to point out was that kind of like, in despite class, and I guess even despite color in some ways, I guess you could say a predator is just a predator. Like someone who's just going to feed off of you. A parasite is just going to be a parasite,
mm-hmm.
regardless of who they're feeding off of, right? So like this family, you know what's so funny? I actually forgot they were racist. Despite seeing this movie so many times, I forgot the family was racist. Because they're literally just, they're screwing over everybody. So like, in a way, I had to be reminded that they were racist. Because, you know, there's like one or two moments where they like say the N-word. And then there's like a moment at the beginning where, you know, they're talking about how the building is falling apart. And how they're going to be able to kick out the Poindexter's family. They're like, yep, one last family to go. Then we'll be able to tear it down and we'll build it up. And we can get all these people out. We can get rid. He's like, these people aren't clean. We could get some clean people in here once we get rid of all of these people. It's like, I literally forgot that they were racist because they're just doing so many things that like that thought was like, shit, racism might be the nicest thing about these people, considering all the things that they're doing, like kidnapping babies, treating their daughter like absolute shit. Like like as you pointed out before, the scenes where they're like basically abusing Alice are like extremely uncomfortable to watch.
Oh yeah,
like, extremely uncomfortable. Like the scene where they like grab her and force her to clean up the blood on the floor from the guy that they just killed.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely uncomfortable. Like the like quote unquote mom grabs her, like basically throws her down the stairs, throws her into the blood. She goes like slipping and sliding like it's a water slide. And then, but she's like screaming at her like she made that mess, and she's like, "Clean it up, clean it up." And then as she's like cleaning, she's still screaming at her, and she's like, "You need to be cleaned." And then it's like boiling hot fucking water, throws her at it, holds it down, like it's extremely uncomfortable. That's what I'm just saying for the people who want to watch this movie. This is not a kid friendly horror movie. Like this ain't that kind of movie. Like this is like a legit horror movie with a kid as the lead. This isn't like some, oh, I could just pop this on with like my 5-year-old and we could laugh real quick like a Coraline or something. Like Coraline is scary, but not like this. Like this is just straight up horror. Like you see, you literally see the bodies of the people they killed just straight up like hanging out there. Like they killed Leroy. He blasted his chest up. They show you like, they show them taking pieces off of him to feed the all the boys they have in the basement. They show his like completely open chest sitting in the fucking ground in like water. Like this movie is crazy. This movie is wild. I almost forgot it came out in 91. This movie's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's very in your face. And again, like, yeah, it is disturbing, especially with, because you mentioned earlier about how, like, maybe Daddy, as he calls himself, has something with Alice. I do believe that. And I feel like the sister had no idea about it. I think she knew, but I feel like she always was in the room to make sure he didn't do anything. Because, you know, fast forward, Prince Dexter breaks in, he loses Leroy, he loses Spencer, he finds a way to escape, he tries to get Alice to come with him, Alice is freaked out, and she's like, I don't know anything about the outside. At one end, you're just like, oh my god, just go with him, girl, shut up, and you're just like, damn, you're right, she has no idea what the real world is like, because she's been so sheltered her whole life. He escapes, he basically takes some gold. They're able to pay off the rent, pay off his mom's cancer treatment. But then he tells him he wants to go back because he has to go back to Alice. When he goes back, you see Alice tied up in the attic. And when Point Dexter sees her, you know, he kind of lets her loose. And he was just like, we have to get out. She hears them coming up. And so she pretends she's still tied up. And then you see Daddy come in and you hear her pleading, like, you know, please let me go. And he just grabs his crotch in the most unnerving, disgusting way ever. And then you hear his sister like, Daddy, let's go. Leave her alone. Don't touch her. Like, you can tell she knows that he's a sick fuck. And he probably has, or perhaps she has caught him in the act or about to. And in a way, like, she kind of like puts him in his place, like, don't touch her. Like, it's just really sick. It's really, really sick and disturbing. Props to Point Dexter for kicking him in the balls because he deserved it.
He definitely did.
This movie, man. So much. But at least I didn't text you like, what the fuck, Kendall? Because like I usually do, but I didn't do that. But yeah, it's just like so good. And yeah, to the racism thing. Yeah, I remember when he first said the N-word, I'm just like, oh no. They're one of those. They're one of those people. And then, yeah, their whole thing of, cleansing the neighborhood, like, purging it of its kind of cleanliness, which is basically what gentrification is. It is that. It's purging the neighborhood of people. And I've known people personally who's been displaced in real time when their own building was being, like, taken apart. Like, I personally know people who've been through that. And it's really sad, and it's really, it really doesn't help things. I know how there's always that, I find this stupid, but there's always those like, well, you know, back and forth type of talk about gentrification. Like, is it good? Is it not good? And to be honest, it actually isn't good. You're causing more harm than good. You're causing this, you're causing displacement. You're causing places to be unaffordable. You're causing more rift, therefore more crime. More violence, because these people are like, everyone's like unhappy with it. Like, if you really cared about it and wanted to help, you'd be giving these neighborhoods money to fix it. And I'm sure someone's like, yeah, but there are people who, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, that's not their fault. when you put people in a no, and I'm going to be serious about this because I take my neighborhood. Oh, no. My neighborhood's a prime example of that. I mean, you know.
Oh, I know. I know. I'm laughing at more so what you said to people going because there's always somebody to be like, play the devil's advocate.
Yes.
Yeah. So not to even cut you off, but it's just, I remember one comedian said it really funny. He was just like, the devil does not need an advocate. He's the devil.
Yes. So, that is true. But yeah, because like my neighborhood prime example is that, you know, when people are grown up in a neighborhood where they don't have resources for good healthcare, good doctors who actually give a damn, good facilities where you get your service at a good, timely manner, good produce, good food, broken schools, broken this, you know, buildings who have really shitty light, heat, water, whatever. When you're accustomed to that, you think that's what you deserve, and therefore you act on it and think this is normal. So when people are given funds, like, hey, let's help this, let's help that, they literally have no idea what the fuck to do with it. Like, you need to teach them and tell them, hey, you deserve better, and make them believe they deserve better. That's why I hate when people say, well, we could give these people neighborhood money, but they don't use it, or they use it for good. And it's like, yeah, because you're giving it to people who are taking advantage of it. Because there are people within those neighborhoods that do take advantage and want people to stay in the slums. Because I've seen it, everyone's seen it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yes. And this movie is like a prime example of that, of what that looks like. And their whole notion of like, we need to purge, we need to clean this, we need to do that. That's why I love like Point Dexter's sister Ruby for gathering everyone in the neighborhood, everyone they had affected, and tell them like, yo, you're not doing this anymore. You're done. Like, you are done. And like, I was just like, damn, Ruby's a badass bitch. Like, I love her. Like, because she could have been like those sisters, like older family members who are just like, Point Dexter, like, you're crazy. What you saw was an illusion. You don't know what she thought, but no, she knew that the family was crazy. His uncle knew the family was crazy because, you know, he's a kid. If a kid tells you, hey, I saw this and that, sometimes your first action is going to be like, you know, you probably imagined it. You don't know what you saw. But they took his word seriously, which I appreciated. And they did something about it, which it's rare in movies like that. Because the first thing the kids always dismiss, always the first, until shit gets really bad. But they were first to be like, no. And that just shows how deep and bad it was. Because, yeah, the uncle said that how they've been doing this for years. The funeral, the grandfather, that how they've been doing it for years. They started as a funeral home. They were selling cheap coffins, but promoting them at a high price, which people do that sometimes. And then they got into real estate, which they were like taking these homes and be like, hey, we can make money off this. And like, it's really sad. And it's based on realism, and it's real, and it's sad and just angry, you know? And it's just like, damn, again, props for Point Dexter for kicking him in the balls. Cause I would too. And so did Alice. She kicked him in the balls.
Yeah, word. And even just to harp on how much his sister believed him at the very beginning, right? Even though his nickname is like, Fool, it's Fool, and it's funny because you're just like, why was somebody call somebody a fool? She did the tarot card reading, and she pulled up the card Fool on his birthday. She was like, oh, you're the fool, and you know, but she made it clear to him, like, the fool isn't stupid, the fool is just developing, he's just ignorant to how the world currently functions, like, he's learning and adapting to like how things are, but like, that's what just makes him the fool. That's it. That's what she made it clear to him. Like, she's like, I'm not calling you dumb. Like, because she made it very, very clear. Like, he's a smart kid. He does all of this. She even told Leroy. She's like, nah, he's a good kid. Like, he wants to go to be a doctor. He wants to do all of these things. Like, he's a really good kid. So she made it very simple. Like, she made it very clear to him that, like, I don't think less of you. I think a lot of you. And so anytime he came to her, it made perfect sense that she believed him. She was like, yep. I know this kid. He doesn't go out here causing trouble and getting on people's nerves. He's always trying to look out for people. He's a good person. And that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was a cool thing. It was nice to have that family dynamic to show that, you know, they had each other's back. And I mean, of course, you know, you kind of have to when you're in a situation like that. When the world is against you.
Definitely.
From every corner, you have to, you know, it's family. And yes, I'm quoting, you know, Fast and the Furious, whatever.
La familia.
I do it for family.
Gotta be like that.
Yeah.
It gotta be like that sometimes. And of course, everything you said about gentrification is clear. I'm pretty sure if anybody listening at this point, they already know our feelings on half this stuff, and they probably agree, because I doubt they'd listen to a black person and a Puerto Rican person talk about this stuff every week if they didn't agree on some level, unless mm-hmm. you just really, really hate us, which, if that's the case, you can hate listen. I ain't mad at you. But
I'm telling you, it's those people who are like, I already know it. I can hear it.
It is what it is. That's how they feel. But obviously, as you pointed out, all of that stuff is true and remains true about gentrification. You know, it does a lot more harm than good. And as somebody who's, I guess, I lived through it in a lot of ways, because I've left areas that ended up being gentrified. I've left areas because they were in the process of gentrification. Short area I'm in now is also kind of in its own process of doing so. It helps, but it doesn't really help in the same way. You know, mm-hmm. You displace people, you kind of tell people what their value is. Like, imagine living in a neighborhood. Not imagine, but we have. You and I personally have. You live in a neighborhood, for people who can't imagine it, if you haven't, but imagine you live in a neighborhood a good portion of your life, I don't know, 10, 15 years, and maybe you just lived in a neighborhood because you liked it. Maybe there's parts of the neighborhood that aren't that great. I don't know. Maybe the schools aren't good. Maybe buildings are falling apart, kind of like in this movie. And then somewhere along the way, somebody just pops in and be like, all right, cool, we're going to fix all this. You're like, oh, that's dope. You're going to fix it? They're like, yeah, but you got to leave. Like, hold on, what? Mm-hmm. I had to deal with this broken shit, but then now everybody who leave come in next get all the fixed shit. Like, that's fucked up. Like, that's just a bad deal all around.
Yep. And that's clearly what gentrification is, for those who may not know what it is. And they're like, but they're making it good for the neighborhood. It's like, no, they're making it good for themselves, not for the neighborhood. And that's why I feel like gentrification as a whole, I understand the concept of it, but I feel like it needs to be fixed within so that it could actually do good for the neighborhood versus doing it harm. You know what I mean? And I mean, like, some communities are trying to do that, where they're like, okay, we're going to fix it within on ourselves, and that's great. But mm-hmm. they still need the proper resources to do it, and the patience and time to do along with it, which sometimes they still got to fight with. And it's always a constant battle with it. Like this. You know, they're trying to find for money to pay the rent, stay in the house, to stay in the home, to get, you know, his mom's stuff, because they're basically trying to fight to survive, trying to fight the world that literally told him, like, yeah, like you said, like, you're less than, like, and
yeah.
And it's really fucked up how it's still happening today. Like, we're in 2022 and it's still relevant. Still very, very relevant. Like, we're in New York City. New York City is highly gentrified. There's very small cities left that are not fully gentrified, but it's getting there to the point that New York City as a whole will be unlivable, and it's sad.
Kind of currently already kind of is unlivable in a lot of ways. I think New York City, despite all of its money a lot of the time, tends to forget that everybody's here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody's here, because I feel like with New York specifically, and I always say this to a lot of people I know, New York is a city where, if you haven't been here, if you have been here, you'll probably understand what I'm saying next. If you haven't, this will kind of paint a picture. New York City, despite your income level, if you live in New York City, then the boroughs, like Brooklyn, Manhattan, Queens, Bronx, even, we don't really count Staten Island because it's out there, but sure, we can go with that if you want to go there. hell, Wu-Tang out there, so it is, or was that Long Island? I think that's Staten Island, but yeah. If you're within the boroughs, basically, if you're not like on some upstate New York shit, if you're like in the boroughs, you live near everyone mm-hmm. by default. That's just how this city is like clustered. So you could be a millionaire living, I don't know, across the street from Central Park, but you go four blocks over and the projects are right there.
Mm-hmm.
MTA train station is right there, which MTA train station is basically the ghetto. MTA, I need to do something about the trains, but yeah. The train station is basically the ghetto. And it's the one ghetto that everybody meet in to go wherever they trying to go. Whether you trying to go to the club, go to work, go to see your cousin. Hell, sometimes even get to another state, you need to take the train to a certain stop to get to a certain train. It's the ghetto hub. Like, it's the ghetto. The MTA is the ghetto. Not even the ghetto. MTA is the ghetto. Mm-hmm. So, like, we all so clustered in this city. There is no true separation between classes in this city, because we just, like, you can be literally be a millionaire, walk three blocks over to straight up poverty.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how New York City is like structured. A lot of major cities kind of like that, but New York is just, that's just how we set up here. So it, you can't really just be like, oh, we're going to touch up this one. They do still do it though. They'll be like, we're going to touch up this one neighborhood. We're going to leave this other one alone. It's like, well, you probably going to get the other neighborhood robbed because it's four blocks away. It ain't far. It ain't far, sir.
Mm-hmm. And it's true. It's so true. And what I want to talk about is going to add to like another point. But, you know, me and Kendall just found out that Jordan Peele is planning on remaking The People Under the Stairs. I don't know how he's going to Jordan Peele it, but it's probably going to be even more dark and disturbing, more scary because it's Jordan Peele. But to go on to like what he wants to do with that, back into New York City, which I'm sure he's gonna do that in the movie in some sense, where in New York City they probably do in other states too, that how like they started making buildings that was half and half. You know about that, right? Where it was like half rich, half poor. The poor would go through one door, the rich would have their own entrance and they would never meet.
Oh yeah, I've heard about that. They were doing that with like lottery buildings.
Yes.
Because people were mad that like lower income people were living in high rises.
Yeah, which I'm just like, really? You're upset about that? Like, get over it and go back to daddy. Like, just go back to like your parents, like paying off everything. Go back to that. Like, no. And I'm pretty sure he's gonna put that in for the movie, because that would make sense too, to do that in some way. But yeah, that's another example of how gentrification is really fucked up. Like, it does more harm than good. That's like modern day segregation, which it still exists, people. That never went away. True. That never went away. I'm sure someone just like, we don't live in segregation yet. Go to some parts in Georgia. Go to some parts in the southern. It's still like that. Has not changed.
Some parts. That's a lot of parts of that. That's the reason why I never even go to them states.
Exactly.
People be like, oh, let's go over here. I'd be like, if we fly in by, I will go kind of there, but I don't want to visit a lot of southern states. People think I'd just be joking because I'm a black dude living in America. But if you know anything about some parts of the South, you really should not be there.
Exactly. Like, no. Like, I know I have, like my boyfriend has family in Texas. And I'm like, you come to Texas. I'm like, I'm a very brown person. No, thank you. Like, no, thank you. Yeah,
depending on the part you're going to. Depending on where you're going, it could be an issue, depending on where you're going. Because exactly. Even Texas still has sundown towns. So, depending on where you're going, it could be an issue. But with Jordan Peele remaking it, honestly, I'm not. I wouldn't be super excited about a remake just because this movie still stands the test of time. I don't know. Like I said, we've always said a million times we tough on remakes, but you know, I'm always of the thinking, well, the remake is like good. The original was good. Like, unless you improving it, it's hard for you to just remake it, and you just basically introducing it to a new audience, which that's okay. That just means I ain't gotta watch it, but that's just okay. That's okay if you're just reintroducing it to a new audience. But if I don't know if he do remix it in some way that's kind of like that, I don't know. I'll probably give it a shot just because of how much I love this movie. I'd probably give it a chance, see how it turns out. You know, even though Jordan Peele's name is attached to it, that doesn't mean that he'll probably be directing it. If anything, he'll probably be in charge of production or something, kind of like Candyman.
That is true. Which, so again, Nia DaCosta did a really good job for that film. Just want to point that out.
Yeah. So I'll probably give it a shot. But this original still stands the test of time. I'll say that.
Yeah, because it's still relevant. It came out in 91, still relevant. And I jokingly told Kendall, I was like, when the day comes when these movies are not relevant anymore, that's when One Piece is gonna finally end for my manga fans out there, and it's also when the world's gonna blow up because we finally reach real peace. That's when these films are no longer gonna be relevant. But yeah, it's crazy. It's just insane. But to kind of go into the mind of Wes Craven, because again, all these films that Wes Craven does, he's always based it on real things. Like, for example, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street was based on a real nightmare he had because he's, you know, Wes Craven. What else? Scream was kind of based on a real thing because why not? And this movie is also kind of inspired by a real case that actually happened in 1978. Apparently, burglars broke into a house. When the police came to check it out, they found that this couple was keeping their children in the basement, just locked away. No food, no nothing, just having them starve. So Wes Craven saw that and was just like, oh, you know what would be a really good movie based on that? This, because it's Wes Craven. He likes to freak you out. Let's take real stuff and just and, you know, and they exaggerate it and just put it like, hey, here you go. Are you scared? Yeah, you should be scared. It's real life, motherfucker. I'm just like, why, Wes Craven? I didn't ask for this. But
I gotta give the dude credit though. Like, my man did this. He gave us Nightmare on Elm Street. Mm-hmm. He gave us this. He gave us Vampire in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. He gave us Scream. Like, this man is not no stranger to getting people to, like, star in really interesting roles. Like, Scream. I know people like to say, oh, white women be in everything, so it's not new. But Scream is a big deal. Like, the woman lead makes it. And, like, Sydney is a really unique final girl. She, as we pointed out in the episode, she breaks a lot of the rules and kind of reshaped what a final girl can be. Mm-hmm. Nightmare on Elm Street, we get a really awesome fucking villain. It's like really charismatic, really crazy, legit started out scary, got kind of funny along the way, but in general, just like a really, really amazing and interesting character. Once again, a really strong woman. We got Nancy, who's like fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Vampire in Brooklyn. We get Eddie Murphy.
And the queen.
We get Eddie Murphy playing
and
a vampire.
And the queen. Angela Bassett. Yep, the queen.
Angela Bassett. Fucking awesome. Angela Bassett basically was like a final girl for that movie. It's fucking awesome. And even before we got Vampire in Brooklyn, we got this. People understand, so I got, like, the lead is a little black kid in L.A. Mm-hmm. And him and this little, like, abused white girl named Alice, like, saved the day. Like, this dude has versatility, and he don't mind putting interesting people in these roles. Like, he doesn't just default to a white dude or something like that, which I don't mind white dudes being lead sometimes, but it's nice that he don't just default to that for all of his movies. And he seems to be interested just in... Obviously, the man passed, but he seems to be interested in just, like, topics and just how he can make topics that are already scarier. And I applaud that.
Yeah. I mean, Wes Craven definitely was, like, he was very interested, especially with this. Like, he did a really interesting job. I mean, it's funny because I saw an article that kind of said that how it still feels like it's in the perspective of a white guy's view, because the way the neighborhood that Poindexter lives in. And it's just like, yeah, I mean, we have seen that trope in many movies that there's based on the hood area. But take that away, it's still a good film with a lot of social commentary that's very realistic, very relatable, very relevant, that is probably still gonna stay and, you know, would not age out. And yeah, I'm curious of to see what Jordan Peele is going to do with this new adaption of it. Would it be crazy? Yeah.
No, go ahead. I'll ask my question after you go.
I was going to say that, wouldn't it be crazy if he's going to do the Candyman treatment? Was going to be like a soft reboot and a continuation? That would be sick.
That would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I would, like, probably welcome that.
Poindexter saving people again with Alice.
Yeah, they bring him back as an adult now to help out. That would be dope.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's the old man. And his, like, grandchildren go through it or something. I don't know. That could be pretty cool.
I know. He'll be like,
oh, but I was going to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
That criticism that people had about it feels like it's from a white dude's lens. Like, was it? I think I read the article too, but, like, did you feel like it was because they were just saying that because the kid's from the ghetto, or?
I think it's because.
What do you think they were saying that?
I think it's because the way the neighborhood looked. It was run down. It was broken. It was really dirty. It was all this. Because I feel like in other films that they're based in the ghetto, it always has the same backdrop, has the same monotone colors, the same type of scenarios. And they're like, well, not all ghettos look like that. I mean, yeah, it's true. Not all ghettos look like that. Not every ghetto looks like it's an abandoned warehouse. But some do. Some don't. Every neighborhood is different. I think that's why they said it, that it still felt like it was through a white man's lens, because of the way the visual looked when you were looking at Poindexter's home life and the whole neighborhood, the way it is, the way it was, like, so, like monotone colors, versus when he went into the siblings' house, where it was, like, very colorful, very bright, very lively. I think that's why they said
Okay. That's a real thing, though.
Mm-hmm, it is.
Like, I feel like somebody just wanted to make a point that the creator of this was white and that that's a problem, but I think that can be a problem. Like, you can have a white person write a story with, like, people of color and it just not feel accurate to, like, how those people are or how they exist. And so that's totally a criticism that you can make of films. I don't think that's one you can make of this film. Because I would say clearly the way the way Poindexter interacted with his sister, interacted with Leroy, interacted with other people from his neighborhood, and even the crazy ass family whose house he helped break into, those interactions felt like real and like authentic. And like the whole point of the neighborhood being broken down was that they pointed out very clearly was that the landlords were intentionally letting all of these buildings fall apart. Like that was a point of the story. They owned the neighborhood and they let the entire neighborhood fall apart because they wanted to get rid of everyone. That I don't think it's not random that the neighborhoods looked like that. It was
intentional.
It sounds clearly intentional.
Yeah.
So it just sounded like somebody wanted to make a criticism of the white person being the writer here or the director, but I don't
probably just I think reaching.
In some cases that could work. Yeah, they were just reaching because in some cases I think that is a valid criticism, but not here.
Yeah. And I've seen movies that do that without intention. They just do it, just do it. And then there are some who do it intentionally just to show what it's like. But yeah, it was definitely intentional. Again, Wes Craven knew what he was doing with this film. He gave you a film about, you know, this boy going on a wild adventure. A really wild adventure. He gave you some horror and he gave you a smack in the face of just nonstop social commentary of how the world really is divided. It's really fucked up. And it's 2022 and we're still talking about the same thing. The same thing. That's sad. You people are sad. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not kidding. Your people are sad.
They definitely are. People are sad, but. Yeah, no, we got everything in this movie. You get the scares, you get commentary, you really get a bit of everything, and it's a fun movie despite all of that. Like despite all of this insanity fucking happening, it's a fun movie. Yes, it has those uncomfortable moments as I mentioned, but it is a fun, exciting, and interesting movie overall. And I love it. I love it so much. I love it dearly. Thank you, Wes Craven, for this. It's such a good movie. It's just so much everything. Even with the social commentary, it's not like some dumb relief, like thrown in type of thing. It's like it's all melded into the story. It's not something where a character just randomly stands up and gives a speech about how white people ain't shit. Like that's not what the social commentary is by any means. It's just it's more of like, you know, direct dialogue about the things that are happening and this is why they're happening. So this movie's great. It's just great. And I'm happy you finally saw it.
Yeah, it's definitely good. I really liked it a lot. Wow. Well, I show my niece and nephew are adults now. So, yeah, I'll tell them, like, yeah, you guys should watch this movie. They're very into social commentary, so I'm sure they're going to be like, I have thoughts. Like, yeah, probably the same thoughts I had. But,
I'm like, I feel ways.
Yeah. What in the Caucasian was going on here? But, yeah, it's definitely good. Definitely recommend it. And yes, if you plan on watching this movie with your children, just be mindful of the themes in the film. It's a lot of horror, a lot of shock horror, a lot of abuse. It's cannibalism, maltreatment of children. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. Is it a fun movie? Yeah, it's fun. Would it traumatize your 5-year-old? Probably, but I'm pretty sure they're already traumatized by Walking Dead. Why not?
yeah, by that standard, yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, I know 5-year-olds who watch Squid Games, so, hey.
Maybe they'll be all right with this.
Exactly. But yeah, one thing I want to add is Sean Wheeler, who played Roach. I love that guy because he's always playing obscure characters. obscure characters, and I didn't even know that was him until I saw the movie, and I was like, wow, Sean Wheeler. Always playing some weird ass character. But yeah, it's the last thing I want to do.
Roach is the man.
Yeah.
Everybody needs Roach in their life.
Yeah, the way he said,
good dude.
Yes. He died for the cause.
Like, God damn it, Roach. That's one of the funniest things in the whole movie to me.
Yeah.
Roach running through the walls and the dude trying to catch him. Oh man, that's so great. I'm finally happy you saw this. This is good. I'm good. I'm ready to get out of here. I'm hoping you guys check this out. This is awesome.
And with that, we will end it with, you know, I hope you guys are having a safe and good Black History Month. And if you're in New York City, survive the cold. It's brick outside. Anyway, word. But yeah, so see you later, guys. Ooh, ghosts, goodbye.